Eric Kurzbard.
Hi, Rich. How you doing?
Welcome back.
Great to see you. Thank you very much.
You look different, so maybe we start there. Your health's different. Your mind's different. Something's going on. Fill me. Get me up to speed.
Why do I look and feel different?
Yep.
I'm sober. I quit doing everything.
Everything?
Everything. I don't drink.
Wow.
I don't smoke. I don't even drink coffee anymore. So, yeah, I'm much clearer.
Congratulations, mister.
Thank you.
So, complete sobriety on everything?
Complete, yeah.
And you're feeling good?
Yeah, I feel great.
How hard was it to start?
It was pretty hard. I thought it was going to be a lot easier, but it was a process. It took me like a year to finally shut it all down.
Is this new version of you dialing in with your art, or is it sending you backwards? Because
no, it's connecting. I was wondering if I would still be able to make art the same way, but it's totally, like I said, I was up till 3 o'clock in the morning last night painting, just purely out of passion for painting.
You're having fun?
And I was having a good time, and I was constant. Yeah, it was just, it was almost exactly the same as being accentuated with, you know, something else.
The art is now continuing, if not even evolving?
The art is evolving. I started doing Tai Chi.
Tell me about that.
Tai Chi and Qigong. And Qigong is basically giving gratitude to the universe for everything. Like your soul, your body, your friends, just every possible aspect of life that you can think of, you're grateful for.
Okay.
And so being grateful for everything is a great attitude to have.
So you've been at this about a year?
I've only been doing that about 3 months. So I'm 3 months into the Tai Chi.
So an attitude of gratitude via Tai Chi?
Yeah, and then I'm doing the Tai Chi movements to the point where I can teach it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You did a yoga training program one time, if I remember right.
I did three yoga teacher training programs at Nexus Yoga Institute.
So is the best part of your sobriety remembering all the weird stuff that you do during the day?
You mean that I used to do or that I do now?
I'm saying both. Because you're a very interesting person, man. And I've seen a lot of versions of you. And the one thing that I can always say is something interesting is going to happen. I'm not sure if it's going to go over there, if it's going to go over there, or up here or down there. But I know something's going to happen. So I'm asking now, is the biggest difference that you remember everything and you're all fired up? Or are you more singular focused? And now, like, kind of you move through a standard day?
I remember everything and I'm very focused. And the main thing that I'm into now is the surfboards. I've been working in the surf industry all my life.
Say a year. Say a year.
So if I could pick a year, I'll just start at the beginning. My grandfather was a surfer. My mother and father, my aunts and uncles are all surfers. I'm a third generation surfer.
Holy cow.
My grandfather, Ronald Bobian, bought a house in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, a block off the beach. And if I looked out my bedroom window, I saw the back of the WRV shop. The wave riding vehicle shop was literally in the back of my window. And I would see this guy, Mickey, fixing surfboards. So as a little, I mean, literally like little guy, 3 years old, 4 years old or something, would wander over there. This little kid would come over and be like, hey, what are you doing? And he's fixing surfboards. And he's like, hey, little guy, what's going on? And he became like kind of a mentor.
Is that the fellow who passed away a little while ago and now haunts the place?
Yes, Mickey. Very famous guy, Virginia Beach and North Carolina guy. Everybody knows him. He's pretty much the face behind WRV.
Yeah, I've read and heard the stories. They're like, hey, he's...
So 1 year, I did really well in the East Coast Championships. I've never gotten first place. I've gotten lots of seconds and thirds. Actually, 1 year I got second place and I got so mad I threw my trophy across the parking lot and they kicked me out of the ESA for an entire year. But the year that I did that... he said, he told everyone, he says, I've known this kid since he was a baby. And so that's pretty much my start. My grandfather had a big, huge longboard that I couldn't even carry. I had to drag it through the sand to the beach, drag it back. I got my butt kicked on it. Like I'd take off in a wave and the thing would just flip over and roll me and bang me. And I didn't really enjoy that board too much.
Hey, so fast forward from East Coast to West, because I know you got a lot. The story picks up as you get a little bit older.
Well, still on the East Coast.
What year are we talking in the story right now, more or less?
This is the 70s.
Okay, so late 70s.
I got pushed into a wave probably before the 70s. I think they put me on a surfboard as a baby in probably 1969 or something and pushed me on waves. I used to ride those inflatable rubber rafts.
Those are the best.
The owner of the Kitty Hawk t-shirt factory gave me a Chuck Dent surfboard. I think it was a 610. Wasn't a big fan of that board, but my aunt, Suzanne, she surfed, and she had a friend named Marsha Kologi who had a Donald Takayama Scorpion, but it wasn't called a Takayama, it was called a Surfing's New Image. I bought that board for $60. That board I liked. It had a beautiful sunburst airbrush on the bottom and a big red see-through fin.
Was that a catalyst for some of your future designs and whatnot?
I love that board. Well, that's basically the beginning of the Scorpion, because I actually went into the Takayama factory and I saw it on a, he has a board with all like the history of his boards, and it was on there and it said Surfing's New Image on it, and I saw it and I was like, that was my third surfboard right there.
Nice.
Like, my third board was a Takayama, and that was in the 70s. I was probably 10 or 11 years old when I got that board.
All right. So bring us through the 80s, because that's the media that you share.
Well,
that's what I start seeing is some pictures, some magazines.
So my parents moved me to Ocean City, Maryland when I was 11 or 12 years old. So this is 77 or 78. And there, it was probably 1980 that I began surfing for BB Bomber Surf Shop.
Okay.
So I began working in a surf shop. And so I started fixing dings. Next thing you know, I was fixing dings for the whole town. I was fixing dings for the surf shop. So I really got familiar with fiberglass and stuff like that.
And everybody in the town too.
And then the surf shop had its own surfboard shaper, Michael Heyman. And Michael Heyman started driving me out to the surfboard factory in a Volkswagen bus. And there I worked with Chris Tillman, Doug Brown, and Skill Johnson. Skill Johnson is the commentator for the Pipeline Masters. He's the guy on the mic at the Pipeline Masters. He's the guy who ran the Menihune contest in Haleiwa with Shane Dorian and Ross Williams and those guys that went on to gain fame with Kelly Slater and his,
the whole Momentum Generation.
They were all part of that, and they were kind of mentored by Skill Johnson. Skill Johnson taught Jack Johnson how to play guitar. Skill Johnson is one of the guys that I watched shape surfboards. So I'm watching these guys shape. I started grabbing little pieces of surfboard foam and shaping little tiny surfboards like this big, just figuring it out. And that was the beginning of it. And then from there, I moved to California right out of high school in the 80s. 17 years old, I graduated. I was sponsored by Rip Curl, Gotcha. So I was a sponsored pro surfer by then. And I went out there, and then I watched Terry Sennett of Infinity Surfboard shape. I watched Chris McElroy shape. I watched Timmy Patterson shape.
So this is through the 80s. You're just seeing all this and digesting it.
Yeah, just hanging out in the shaping rooms. I've watched Donald Takayama shape. Just in the room, studying them, watching what they're doing. And eventually I started doing it myself. And so tinkered around with it. I had a logo. And
what year time frame is this that you're talking? Logo, like your brand.
I would say I started my own brand. I believe it was 89.
Okay.
I had my art. This is actually the logo right here. It's Kerr's Boards. So I just added an O to my name. Nice. And Kerr's Bard became Kerr's Board. And my friend Ron Wharton was one of my favorite artists. I had him draw up the logo. It was a slow start. I started making surfboards for my friends. I made a surfboard for my friend Steve. I made a surfboard for my friend Wade. Wade passed away. I started making just surfboards for friends it was called Keiko Surf Shop out of Ocean City, Maryland. They had a surf shop with like a glass wall where people could actually come into the shop and just look in and they could watch you shape. And they let me use that room whenever I wanted. And so I worked out of there for a while. Never got like crazy serious about it. I wasn't trying to like make it into a big business or anything like that. And then when I went back to California, I worked in a little factory there that did fiberglassing. And we had a shaping room there. And so I was just making boards kind of intermittently. Flash forward to 2009, I was out surfing at Trestles, and Matt Biolas paddled up to me and he goes, well, I have they've asked me to do a board for this event. And he goes, you know, I thought, you know, maybe, you know, you could do this for me, a little art project deal. So I took a board and I made a surfboard that I dremeled into the deck the image of Upper Trestles. and I painted it and I fiberglassed it and I put it into this award. Well, the event turned out to be the Masters of Shaping, and it was held at the Ole Hansen House, which overlooks the San Clemente Pier. So I get there and all the shapers had showed up, and Stuart is there, Cole surfboards, Timmy Patterson boards, everything you think of, Hope, Terry Martin from Hobie was there.
Were you tripping out while this is happening, or were you?
And they let me put my art in the exhibit too. So they're like, oh, we don't have anywhere to put your art, so you can put it over here. And it wound up going right in front of the bay windows that overlooked the San Clemente Pier. So there's my art. I have a picture of Mickey Munoz. I have a picture of Gidget standing in front of my table checking out my art.
So you're tripping out again? Were you losing it, or was it?
I was like, wow, I'm here with all these great, you know, really famous surfers, and this is pretty cool. So the event comes to the part where they're going to vote for the board, and Mickey Munoz comes up to me and he goes, "Oh, I just wanted to let you know I voted for your board." And I thought, well, he's one of the judges, so there's probably like a whole panel of judges. But it turned out he's the head judge. They bring my board up there, and Matt Biolas's name on it because it was a board for lost surfboards. So the lost surfboard wins, and Matt Biolas goes up there to accept the award, and he's like, "Well, I can't accept this award because Kurzbard did that. Kurzbard, you know, made that board." And so so I received the 2009 Masters of Shaping Award. They brought me up. Wingnut gave it to me. Wingnut presented me with the award. So I have, it's a little plaque. It's got Mickey Munoz's autograph on it in gold ink. So it's pretty cool. It's one of my, I have over 200 surfing trophies from the, you know, from competing. But that little plaque is probably my favorite.
All right.
Yeah.
That's all amazing info. Like, holy crap, dude, like, those are real amazing people to meet and associate with and have on your resume and in your mind and your heart. I bet that's something you carry.
We don't have enough time in this podcast to, like, the first time I went to Hawaii, my friend drove me to Lanikea, and we pulled up in the car, and I get out of the car, and the guy next to us is getting out of his car, and it's Mark Richards. So I'm looking, and Mark Richards is grabbing a surfboard off the car, and I'm looking at my friend, I'm like, it's, you know, and he's like, mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, this is too much. And we paddle out, and it's just me and my friend, and I look over, and it's Mark Richards, Dane Kealoha, and Johnny Boy Gums.
Oh, gosh, did they all start swinging at you and telling you, yeah, the water white guy, or were they cool?
We surfed a little farther away from them. They were kind of in, like, a little three-pack, and my buddy and I were just, we stayed, you know, about 20 yards down the line. But I remember looking back, and all I could see was these giant sprays. I saw some of the biggest sprays from people hitting the lip that I've ever seen in my life. I just remember looking down, and I was like, I get the tops of these waves keep exploding from these guys. It's one of the best surfers in the world and two of the most powerful surfers in Hawaii. And this is my first session in Hawaii. And the waves were amazing. 6 to 8 foot, just really long, like Point Break reef.
A couple of years ago, we covered a lot of that. We talked about a lot of your Nosara story, and we just covered your surfing history. What's your thesis statement of what you're doing right now? Like, say, here's what I'm doing, here's what I want to accomplish. Like, what are you trying to do right now?
Right now, I'm really excited about making surfboards.
Okay.
I want to take all those years of experience. I feel like it's a lot of intermittent experience, but when you clump it all together, it's a lot of experience. There's a lot of knowledge there. I really know what I'm doing. I feel like I am a really good shaper. I'm really excited about creating boards for the people here in town that work for them.
What type of boards do you want to build?
Well, the type of wave we have is not a steep hollow wave, although we do have Ostia now and we do have hollow waves here. So I know that longboards, I really want to get into longboards.
Okay, so longboards?
I know mid-lengths are really popular right now, and that Scorpion design is pretty awesome. So I kind of want to tinker around with that, modify it a bit, make something kind of that branches off of that.
So you're Guione-style surfboards, mm-hmm. mainly. Twin fin, mid-length longboards. And that seems to be...
That's what works best for here, and I think that's the funnest thing to shape. Maybe the skinnier needle-nose high-performance boards are kind of on the back burner for me. I'm not that... Because that's covered.
Okay.
There's a lot of guys, you know, I'm sure people are going to ask for that, and I can do it. I really want to get into channels and concaves, like bottom curves and stuff like that. I've got a good rail. I have kind of like, a guy showed me one time I was shaping with this guy who had a backyard shaping room, and he showed me this little trick that Like if you have a rail of a surfboard that you really like, you can put some sticky back sandpaper on it and take a chunk of surfboard foam and rub it back and forth on there until the rail of the surfboard goes into the foam. Then peel the sticky back sandpaper off the rail, stick it into that little foam mold, and now you have a mold of that rail. So I can actually make rail molds, and if I like certain kinds of rails, when you're shaping the surfboard and you're almost finished, I can take this little thing and just give it a couple passes, check the rail to make sure I have it, you know, exactly the way I want it and stuff like that. So right on the money.
Is she more on the 60-40 side or 50-50 side?
I like them all. I like all the variables. I like riding different surfboards.
That's something we have in common.
Yeah.
That's something we have in common.
Yeah, you love surfboards. And I love that.
I do. I have an issue with that.
A collector's, you know, like a hoarder. I could hoard surfboards.
Actually, I
had 50 surfboards at one time.
I genuinely want to ride different equipment. Yeah. I have a really hard time riding the same board.
I get bored with riding the same board over and over again.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. And Guiones, this might come across as negative. I don't mean it to be. I'm just being honest. There's a lot of people who just stand there.
One of the first popular surfer magazine issues had a thing on the front that they made a big deal about, and it said you stand but you don't surf. So they're basically saying people are standing on their surfboards but they're not really surfing, they're just kind of standing there. And it was kind of like a poking at, you know, maybe Malibu, because Malibu is getting crowded, and everybody was surfing Malibu, and they're like, yeah, there's people that are standing on their surfboards and surfing, but are they really surfing?
Okay, let's take that point and bring it back to Guiones. I'm telling you, this is my opinion, most people are just standing there. Next point, most people are just standing there on shortboards. To add on to that even more, most people are standing there on shortboards and waves that are too soft for said shortboard. Right. And then you watch them surf, which is tough enough when people just stand there. Then when you go to turn, like a bottom sinking tail,
right,
basic turn, same thing over and over again. And I've been watching this for years and years and years. Now, granted, there's some people who freaking rip, and I talk about those folks all the time. But right now, I'm talking about people riding the wrong equipment, being right, very boring.
Right. So people, a lot of times, guys, they read the magazines, watch the movies, and they see these ripping hot surfers. You know, we'll take Kelly Slater, for example, because he's easy to pick on. And they'll be like, I want to ride what he's riding. He's the best surfer. He's you know, surfing really good. You know, Felipe Toledo's the fastest guy. I want to ride what he's riding. But they're usually riding a minimal board. They've got it taken down to the minimal because they want to do super tight turns. They want it to be lightweight. And so other people watch them and they think, well, if I ride what they ride, I'll be good too. But it usually doesn't work that way. Guys that surf like that can surf anything. You know, they say you can ride a door, right? So if he can surf a door, he can surf anything. And most people can't surf anything. So I feel like most people need to surf on a user-friendly surfboard, something that works for them.
Okay, now pause there, please, because that's you literally just read my mind and made my point. Let me throw myself under the bus. As soon as I got out of high school and stopped playing baseball and all the aspirations of going pro playing baseball and all that stuff went away, I was like, oh, I got to get a car. I went out and bought a red Firebird because I thought it looked cool. And this is funny as I tell a story, but I was like, yeah, I need this. This will make me cool. This will help me with ladies and friends. I'll be impressive. And I have this sports car. Well, it turns out it was a V6. It wasn't fast at all. So I just had this thing that looked like it was fast. And then when I went out, if I ever really tried to race a fast car, one with a V8 or a Mustangs at the time were real popular, I'd get waxed.
Uh-huh. I would have waxed you in my 1975 Pontiac Le Mans.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
454 big block in it.
All right, so you don't got to be a jerk about it, but okay.
$700 for that one.
So I worked as much as I could, making very little money to just try to make this car cool because I thought I needed to. And now, fast forward, I'm an old man and I live here. And that is what I see happening with 90%+ of the surfing populace out there. It's the same thing that I did back then, which was one of the biggest mistakes I ever made.
Yeah.
So I'm bitching about surfboards a lot right now, but I'm going to bitch about longboards for a second. I can't stand when someone just stands in the middle of the longboard.
Right.
That thing is meant to, you should
walk
be
it.
Walk it. You should be at the back or the front and everywhere in between. And I don't mind if someone's standing in the middle if the rail's placed properly.
Right, if they got a good trim going on.
Just most people don't understand rail work. So some of my good friends and clients, actually, I rode a shortboard yesterday. somebody saw me out there like, oh, I didn't know you ride shortboards. Wow. And it's like, I'm just fat. I'd ride one all the time if I could. But I can't. So, and we live at Guione, so I don't want to drive my red Firebird from high school, metaphorically speaking, going to the racetrack. That didn't make no sense. So here we're at this fat, soft, wussy wave. Everyone's riding the wrong way. I've been bitching about this podcast for a couple of years, and now probably more years in the future. Should I try to convert people because I think they're doing the wrong thing, or should I let them keep riding the wrong board and enjoying a lot higher wave count for those of us that are riding the right board?
Well, I mean, servers in general are pretty, do I want to say selfish?
Yeah, we're super selfish.
Yeah,
surfers. It's an individualistic sport.
Surfers are pretty selfish in general. So, and when you're out there in the middle of the crowd, I was out the other day on a small day. My good buddy, Thea, and my good buddy, Thea, the piano player. He
Music Theo is what I call him.
So he was riding a fish, and I looked at him, he was just bitter. He was mad because he was surrounded by longboarders. And I feel like if I see a shortboarder on a really small day, I'll be like, you go, you can catch them because I'm catching a million waves. If you can catch a wave on your, if a good wave comes in and it's like the only wave that the shortboarder is going to catch, you should let them go. Because that's their only opportunity of the day, and you're going to catch all the little ones that they can't catch. So catch all the waves that the shortboarders can't catch. Let the shortboarders catch the better set waves.
Well, let's give some shout-outs. Who does a good job of that?
Well, like, you're pretty good at that. You give waves away. I mean, our crowd here is pretty nice. We don't really have any mean guy. I might be the meanest guy out in the lineup. We don't really have any, like, bad guys that are hassling or being too overly greedy, I think.
I want to say a couple names because we don't give shout-outs to benevolent longboarders enough.
Benevolent
longboarders. Tommy is real good at that.
Yeah, I mean, like, Tommy, we have a pretty giving crowd. There's a lot of surf instructors that are, used to, I'd say we have a pretty friendly crowd here.
Jordy is a good surf instructor and with a mellow vibe in the water.
Yeah, and he's very, what's the word? He's just very, he'll give you a hoot, and he'll be like, go. He's very positive.
It's been good to have this wave as like the home base because of the vibe. The locals here are so much kinder than basically every break I've been to. Like, go to Playa Negra or Tamarindo Rivermouth, right, or Jaco or Hermosa or Dominical.
And you might get hassled. You might get called out.
Well, here I've seen people...
Or they'll just paddle around you, take drop in on you.
So I've seen people here, locals from here, actually chase away other people saying, this is Guiones, don't act like that.
Right.
Like, I have a lot of respect for that. Now, the younger crew coming up, it's a little bit different. They're a little more...
Well, they're competitive.
A little more competitive, and they're used to paddle battling to get places.
See why? Because surfing is a source of joy, and, you have all these other things going on in your life, and like before, maybe when I was not sober, and maybe I was feeling sorry for myself or something, but I would say that surfing is a source of joy, and so when you're out there surfing, you feel like, you feel like, this is for me. This is what, like, enriches my heart, and so... You might get a little greedy with that. You might be like, well, this is my wave, and I've worked hard for this. I bought a house here in Guiones, and I deserve it because I spent so much money. Or people are on vacation for a week or two, and they're like, I'm only here for a week, and I need to get my surf on because I'm going back to, where it's freezing cold. So, people want their waves.
I want to ask you about localism.
Okay.
If you're from the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
wave-starved, when we get them, they're there, and they're good, but that was pretty quick. California, very intense, much more consistent, but very intense. Hawaii, you have experience Hawaii as well. Back to the stateside and then back to Costa Rica. Can you talk me through localism in each kind of, like, you've had a couple different lifetimes, right? You had as a little kid, then a teenager, then a competitor, then a shaper, and then as a Nosara artist, like.
Nine lives. I'm not sure which life I'm on right now, but so we'll start with the Outer Banks. The Outer Banks was pretty friendly there. It was the 70s, so you might get punched out. If you acted up, an older guy could sock you, and back in the day, they didn't have lawyers and cops and stuff, so you took your beating and you learned your lesson. I moved to Ocean City. Ocean City was a tourist town, so Ocean City has a tight group, and they're kind of like, the tourists, we don't want tourists coming here taking our waves. We got kind of crammed into surfing beaches, which were only a block long. During the summer, surfing was illegal, and you could only surf at one beach. So there was like, we're locals, you're not. So that was definitely there.
So this is East Coast still?
That's East Coast. So then I went to California, and a buddy took me to Trestles, and I immediately started surfing Trestles. Trestles is a crowded wave, and there's a competitive vibe there. And it was really funny because I got in with kind of like the local group, but I'm from the East Coast, 3,000 miles away. But those guys would actually ostracize guys from the next town over, or a couple towns over, or if you just lived a couple miles, you know, like in Malibu, they call it the valley, you know. So if you were just 2 miles inland, they were like, you're from way over there. You're from that town. You're from that town. And there was localism. They'd be like, this is our spot. That's your spot. And you kind of had to watch your toes. And you got gripe, and guys would gang up on you. They'd be like, oh, there's 6 of us or 10 of us and 1 of you, and we're telling you what to do right now.
So California's pretty thick.
They tell you to split. Split was a big word. They say split. Just split. Get out of here.
All right, so take us to Hawaii, because when you first got to Hawaii, you surfed with Johnny Bagones.
I was terrified to go to Hawaii. I told you about the Skill Johnson story. Skill Johnson used to always tell me, Eric, you need to come to Hawaii. Eric, you need to come to Hawaii. But it was the 70s, early 80s, and there was all those stories of guys that look like me getting beat up by big, giant Samoan
through
guys.
The 90s, too.
Yeah, and so I was, like, horrified, because I was like, I'm blonde and blue-eyed, and I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb, and they're just going to be like bonking me on the head. They had the Hawaiian punch. Hawaiian punch was a drink, and it meant like you're going to catch a club from a huge guy whose fingers are bigger than your whole arm. So I was horrified, and when I went there, I was terrified. And actually, the first time I went to Hawaii, I entered a contest at Pipeline. I've never surfed in Hawaii, and here I am. I'm supposed to compete at Pipeline 3 days later.
That was smart, because you could get waves. That's the only way.
Yeah. So I'm standing there, and I look over, and I see Johnny Boy Gums, and this guy is like, he looks like a Terminator. He was just ripped and built and huge, and he was terrifying.
This horror story is all about that guy.
I was terrified. I remember seeing him one day, and he looked at me, and I was just like, I had sunglasses on, luckily, because otherwise you probably would have seen my soul leave my body. And but the thing is you know, I'll take it to this one point. I never got hassled in Hawaii. All I felt was aloha. Everyone was really nice to me. And I remember the day I was leaving, I went into a mini market and I bought like a magazine and I bought like some candy bars and a drink or something. And there was a huge Samoan guy just standing there watching me buy all this junk food, you know, just frivolous stuff that I was going to take on the airplane. And he goes, hey, brada, why don't you buy me a drink? Like a lemonade or something. He just wanted something to quench his thirst. And I thought, like, you know, I just had a good 2-week run here, and everything went well. I never got hassled. I never got beat up. And here's this. Normally, if somebody at like a 7-Eleven or something asked me, I'd be like, you know, go get a job. But this guy, huge guy, and I remember I processed it in my head for a second. And I had a good time here. All this guy wants is like a soda for a dollar, you know. And I said, sure, you know what, I'll buy you a drink. Yeah, go ahead and get whatever you want, and I'll pay for it.
And he slapped the shit out of you?
And he put out this giant hand, and he goes, mahalo, thanks, brada. And he shook my hand with this huge mitt, like a baseball mitt. And I felt real aloha. And so I didn't feel any bad vibes here. All I got was aloha and love, and these are beautiful people. And that was great.
Hawaii was a good experience for you. Bring us to Costa Rica. You lived here not as shaper, pro surfer, Eric. You lived here as artist, eccentric, Eric. Like, we're being brutally honest. The cameras are rolling, but this is our relationship. Sometimes you'd be angry, mm-hmm. and you could see your surfing one way in the water, and then sometimes you'd just be more peaceful than anything. So there was a real strong yin and yang about you. I enjoyed watching your surfing either way, but I could tell. I could tell what mood you were in by watching you surf. And I was wondering if those times you were angry, was that coming from localism here or competition for waves? Or was that coming from something inside yourself? Or was it when a visitor, like what used to make you angry when I saw you in the water, which wasn't every day. It was just like once every 2 weeks. Like, walk me through that. Cause I don't see that in you. I haven't seen that in for months and months, but.
The anger I would say was mostly internal stuff, maybe more like literally like deep-seated kind of like childhood trauma stuff, I would say, like that, because my stepfather didn't surf. He wasn't a surfer. So even though I want to say he supported my surfing, but he really didn't. He really was not into me surfing. He let me do it. He did it begrudgingly.
God, he tolerated it. But for you, it was like
he tolerated.
This was the source of your.
They never came to my surf contest. You know, I surfed a lot of events where the kids' parents would be there. A lot of times, I got you know, there's politics in competitive surfing, and a lot of times it's parent based because you know there's super coach parents that are there and they're coaching their kids and they're yelling and they're screaming. I didn't have that. My parents never came to the surf contest, so sometimes I felt like I won some surfing contests, and I'd see the parents back there talking to the judges, and they would change I would look at the heat sheet and see that I won, and then somebody would come out and tell me that I didn't win, and I knew that it was because somebody's parents went back there and they were juggling results.
Do you think that same political structure exists today?
Yeah, it totally exists right now. It exists all the way up into the pro ranks. You can see them; they're complaining about the judging right now. Right now, it's a big issue. It's still an issue. It's always been an issue. It's very subjective.
I can feel that this one sticks with you, though. It bothers you.
Well, you're asking me why I was angry, and I'm angry because a lot of privileged people come here, and I'm not privileged in that way. In a lot of ways, I am, but I don't have parents that just shovel me money, and when I see those types of people, it makes me edgy. So I feel like I worked hard to be what I am right now, and I did it myself. I didn't have somebody just pushing me along. And
getting to contests alone is expensive.
Boards are expensive. I got sponsored. I was sponsored pretty young, so I have to thank the surf shop for that. BB Bomber Surf Shop got me sponsored, and I got everything I needed, and they paid for all my contest entry fees. But I did all that on my own, not with. No one was, you know, I didn't have an easy ride. I had to do it myself. It was my passion and my love for it that did it. So when I see someone else that kind of has a gravy boat ride, it makes me envious. So I think a lot of my anger is envy-based. Maybe I see somebody and I think like, oh, they've got it, you know, like this. And I have to, you know, I have to eat burritos and you know, like, you know, I lived in a shack. You know, I lived in that little, I lived in a shack for almost 10 years, like a little Tika shack. You know, everyone else is, you know, in mansions and stuff like that. So that, for me, I felt like, that's why.
No, that makes sense.
I felt maybe like a little underprivileged in that way.
You brought up an interesting point because your competition, you didn't have internal support or familial support. You just had some sponsors, but you didn't
I rode my bicycle to the surf contest, carrying my board under my arm. My arm got numb. And when I left, I had a backpack full of trophies, and I carried everything home.
Right. So as fast forward to adult, living in a tiny little surf shack, working as an artist.
Watching some of the richest people in the world come sit next to me and try to take my waves. I'm like, nah, you have all of that, and this is all I have. All I have is surfing, and you're not going to take it from me. So I'm taking that wave. Because you have all of that. You've got this, that, and the other. All I have is surfing. You're not taking my surfing from me. I'll fight you to the death for my waves. Period. That's all I have, and I'm very passionate about it, and I love it. And if you're going to try and take it from me, well, it's on.
The great irony in this is you're so self-sufficient off, and surfing became your core existence. Your family didn't really embrace it. Everything you described is like, this is the one thing I have. I need this. I'm willing to fight for it. That fueled your competitive fire that probably helped you in a lot of contests. So what I'm saying is that anger was a motivator for higher level performance.
Yeah, for sure.
And that makes sense, because when I watch you surf, when you're angry, the top does rip off a little harder. The cutback is a little bit stronger. The paddling, because you're in competition with that for someone, you're not going to miss. So you kind of level up through your anger. And it's impressive to watch your surfing that way. But I also like seeing you in a good mood. But I also like it when you're intense. Now, I hate that you're feeling bad, but I'm saying just as a fan of your surfing.
I think I surf better when I'm angry.
That's what I was trying to say, but be polite.
Sure.
But I don't want you to be mad.
In competitive surfing, you almost have to have an ego and a little bit of a fire. Yeah, to make it work.
I don't think I could ever been a competitive surfer because I'm too tall and fat.
You're too nice.
And I have feelings.
You care about other people.
I'm way too nice. I have a hard time living here just by like being too nice. I don't like the gossip and the the dissension and the snappiness and how much we talk smack so quick. I like that people here are fiery and passionate and well-intended. I love that. But there's also a downside that comes to that. Around here, anything can happen. And people light up. And I don't care for that, man. So I really want to just roll around, say hi to everybody, wave at people. And like, you see me every morning on the water, and I wave and I offer waves. Whenever I'm on a longboard, I tell everyone, go in front of me. If you're on a shortboard, do it, because when I'm on a shortboard, I'm going to need some help. I'm too fat to catch it.
Sharing is caring. And it actually feels good. It feels good. It feels good to give a wave and share joy with other people.
It helps me justify how many waves I do get.
Somebody came up to me one time and they said, you know, when you drop in on other people, you're stealing other people's joy. And it really kind of resonated with me. I was like, oh, I don't want to steal anyone's joy. That sounds terrible.
You were trying to protect your own joy.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. Maybe you're right. Maybe I shouldn't be so greedy with the joy. The joy's all mine.
Well, let's talk about that. How do we, if you could snap your fingers and make two or three things happen around here to improve things, what would they be? And I'll start so you can think about it for a second. Mine would be splitting peaks.
Yeah.
I have a real hard time when somebody takes the very edge and goes around the entire front of the wave when there's lots of people along the way. At least two could have split it.
Right.
Now, for me, that's a big one. So now I'm kind of in the spot where I'll hang there. I don't want to mush someone's barrel, like if it's heaving. But in crowded surf, what's happening is people paddle so much deeper and deeper and deeper and get to where they're not making the waves. So on an inconsistent good wave day or a bad wave day, there's not enough waves to spread everyone out. If it's big and there's lots of waves, well, it spreads everyone out.
Right.
So when it's small, though, and we just push each other further and further back, no one wakes a wave. That bothers me. I think people ought to go left and someone ought to go right when they can't. That was my start for my suggestion. What's an idea of yours?
Sharing waves, splitting the peak. Party waves are fun. I mean, sometimes people are like, oh, I don't want to ride with you, but actually surfing with someone else, that can be fun, sharing a wave. You know, what's really cool is doing the figure eight when you change places.
Like we've done that a couple times.
That's really awesome.
It is. Hey, let's talk about it then. I want to do more figure eights and more splitting of the peaks. What I've learned, the hardest part of that is the one person needs to commit to cutting down and the other one needs to commit to cutting up. And the first time you do it, it's like, wait, I go up now?
Yeah, so the guy in the back goes high and the guy in the front goes low. Drop down, go up, and then you can really get into a rhythm.
I think
the most I did was eight. I think I did eight with a guy at lower trestles. We switched places eight times.
Nice.
It was pretty cool.
Nice.
Eight roundhouse cutbacks.
Figure eights are good.
Yeah, figure eighting. And what is it? I forget what we call that. Tommy Witt does it a lot. Tommy Witt, the longboarder. You'll see him.
It's only to get me started on Tommy Witt.
He's having fun, and he wants everyone else to have fun, and he's got a pretty good vibe.
Well, he's, like, painful to watch.
Because he's so good, right? I mean, just make you feel bad about yourself.
I'm so happy. Just the other day, I took my longboard fin off and did, like, three or four 360s on this big board, and I was like, whoa, cool. I really had to practice learning to steer with my feet and my hands, and I thought it was something.
Oh, and then you watch a video of him doing, like, a 720.
Then I watched him with the fin on do two 360s and then land it and then get a nose ride.
I was at Santa Nerfy one time and they were having a surf contest and they were having tandem surfing. And he pulled a backside helicopter with his girlfriend on the board. So he pulled a tandem helicopter. Backside.
You know who told me about him? Colin McPhillips in 2012 told me about this Tommy Witt kid. And because I was asking Colin, I mean, late 90s, he won his three world championships, and I was lucky enough to become friends with him. And it was so fun surfing with him because he was so fluid and so just stylish. He just had a different way of reading. He sees something that I don't see on a wave.
Yeah.
And so when I was asking him, hey, who do you look up to? Like, who's good? And he's like, well, I don't like watching bad surfing. And I kind of thought he was a little snobby for saying that. But as I evolve, I'm starting to understand what he's saying.
You don't want that in your head.
Right, so now that I've lived here so long and seen people for 10 years stand in the exact same spot doing the exact same thing, trying to be cool when it doesn't look cool at all.
I watch those wipeout videos where they show the guy skateboarding downstairs and crashing. I can't watch that.
Ever since my back injury, I can't watch those either. So Colin's the one who told me about Tommy Witt. He's like, there's this guy. He's just a different level of longboarder, nose rider type, all over the place guy.
He's loose.
Well, it turns out he was very, very right. Now I see that you happen to be friends with the guy. I'd love to talk to him and have him and you guys on a podcast. Are we all go surfing? I would love to get more into this world that you come from. For you, it's just very normal to get to shape a surfboard yourself and it actually work. When I shape surfboards, they're horrible. They're dogs. You know how to paint very well. You can do your own artwork. I can't. I can barely draw a stick figure. Surfing around pro surfers, it's like terrifying and discouraging and motivating all at the same time.
It's good, but in any sport, it's good to put yourself with somebody who's really good at it and try to push your level.
So I was just about to ask, next time Tommy comes back, is it gonna, like, when they say, like, you meet your heroes, it turns out like they're a jerk or something, you don't like him anymore?
No, he's really nice, actually. He's really nice and he's really helpful, and he's the kind of guy that gives waves. He's like, you go. He's a giver.
Huh.
He's coming back. He'll be back.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. And he's shaping now. He's also shaping surfboards.
I bet his surfboards suck and no one knows because he's so good. No one would know if his surfboards stink.
Actually, he really likes the pig shape, which is where it's like wider in the back and it comes narrow. And I hate that design.
I'm glad you started
that's a Dale Velzy thing, and I'm sure it works really good for nose riding, having a lot of board in the back, but just for me aesthetically, I just don't like the way it looks, but he loves it.
Huh.
But, you know, we're all different. It's a very individual sport. It's custom tailored to everyone.
Well, let's go surf and get a session, and we'll put up intermediate level me getting waxed by you guys, but I'd like to learn. I'd like to give
maybe
a shot.
Maybe we can do three on a wave and we'll all switch places like that. We'll do the first party wave. Still can't think of the word.
I don't worry about it. So I think I've surfed longboards fairly well.
Yeah.
If I ever can catch one and the wave has some push, I think I've surfed shortboards fairly well. The only thing I really know how to do that I'm comfortable with is a turn. There's nothing else I can really do consistently, but I can turn, gosh darn it. Unfortunately, I'm large and fat and sink, and I live at one of the softest waves on the planet. I don't know how to surf a mid-length is what I'm getting at. So can you give advice, or what kind of board would you shape someone like me?
How about a mid-length twin fin?
Talk me through that, and how would I surf it?
Those twin pins just became pretty popular. Twin pins.
I'm seeing
that. So a twin fin with a pin tail.
How would you surf it? You surf it from the middle? It's more of like,
well,
a,
it's just loose. You can. What's just
loose, like, sounds good. I like finless boards.
So twin fins are very loose. It's probably the next step up from a finless board, because quads have hold, single fins have hold, thrusters have hold. Twin fins, they're easier to do 360s on. They're gonna maybe slide out when you do a bottom turn because you don't have a stabilizer fin. So you like to slide around. So I would say get a mid-length that's maybe a little bit bigger because you're a bigger guy. And then I would do the pintail for hold. Yeah, I would say you would want like a, and maybe sort of a, almost like, I keep saying scorpions, but it's just such a good model. Something like a scorpion, but a twin fin.
Are you going to get mad at me if I don't like scorpions? I love Takayama boards. As you know, heck, we met with me riding that blue one forever. You've done art of me riding and stuff. But the scorpion for me is not long enough to get to the nose and feel it. And it's not turny enough to turn.
Yours would have to be bigger. You'd have to have a bigger board. But that same similar shape, but I would say put a twin fin on it. Maybe thin it out a bit. You know, Corey Colapinto is shaping a board called the Thin Twin. Thin Twin. So it's a thinner board. It's wider, but it's a twin fin.
I can slide a little thin.
And I was riding his, and he actually had, they weren't even twin fins. They were just the thruster fins that go in with a thruster, but with no third fin. So it was just two small fins, and it was super slidey. You had to kind of hold onto it, and you'd feel the tail drifting out. I believe you would like that.
Thanks for the tip.
Something like that.
Yeah, keep me posted on that. So I want to evolve too. I want to get better through my 50s, even into my 60s. I really do. I think surfing, one of the biggest gifts to us is that you can do it for a long time. And I'm not kidding. I want to keep getting better. I think,
yeah.
I can't stand it. I can't stand basically anything stagnant. I get very bored.
Yeah.
So very bored.
Keep changing surfboards.
Well, that's why I'm riding so many finless boards, is because I'm trying to find a way to amuse myself. It's like I said, I'm big and fat at a soft,
you keep
fat weight.
That you're not fat.
Well, sometimes I am.
Maybe you used to be.
Well, I have like a 50, 60 pound swing every 7 years. So I need a lot of surfboards. But right now I need to figure out what one to ride.
It's just water weight.
Nah, man. It is what it is. I've accepted it. Just It is what it is. Ride the right board for the right conditions and the right body type. Over to skateboarding.
Okay.
And remember, I had that back injury in 2012 and swore I'd never skateboard again?
Right.
Well, on a fast forward time, skateboarding again.
Okay.
My Elisha is almost 16 and he's into skateboarding, and I want to find a way for him to hang out with me. And if I keep skateboarding and I can stay just a little bit in front of him, I'm relevant and I can hang out with my son. Here's an issue, though. I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm panicky. It wrecked my life for a long time. I literally can't watch those videos that you're describing now, like when you're watching a show like Ridiculousness or one of those funny shows and the people have the skateboard injuries. It makes my back fire I've got some PTSD or something going on. But I am also getting the jealousy thing. I'm getting jealous of you, and I always have been, because you're comfortable on a skateboard looking like you're not going to wipe out, but you'll hit the lip almost like you're hitting the lip. When I go to hit the lip, I have a panic attack at the last second about the slide and the concrete factor, because when I got hurt skateboarding, I didn't even do anything cool. A kid just went in front of me. I jumped off and slipped and landed on my tailbone. At that time, I was very skinny. And then I got very fat. But I'm saying all this because I'm trying to get some therapy here on skateboarding, because you'll go up, pop straight up to the lip, or you'll lay back and slide the whole thing around like controlled like. On a surfboard, I think I could do that right now. I'd love to surf in a contest with you and good surfing. Let's see how it goes. I would love it. I so enjoy it. I'm not scared in the water. If we went to the concrete, I am absolutely terrified. You're like how you looked at the surfers in Hawaii. That's how I see you on the skate ramp that's just this tall, but you seem so fluid and controlled. So I'm finishing my rant here. What would your advice be to me right now? Just quit and go home? Or how do I face that without the wrist break and the inevitable stuff that happens in skateboarding?
Well, pads, of course, wrist guards. Bending the knees is really important. Staying low.
You hit me where it hurts.
Yeah, so if you're standing too tall, the taller you are, the harder you're going to fall. So you really want to bend your knees. You want to think like a slinky, like a spring. If you feel like you're going to fall, you almost want to go into an immediate crouch. Bend those knees a lot. Get really low. If you think about when skateboarding first began, they were trying to emulate surfing. Mm-hmm. Now surfing emulates skateboarding. But in the beginning, skateboarded emulated surfing. And who did they emulate? They emulated Larry Bertelman. Larry Bertelman is known for that really low hand cutback, bending his knees and getting really low. They called him swivel hips.
Yeah, they went there. So, you're exactly right. I know exactly what you're talking about.
If you're really accustomed to reaching down and touching the ground while you skateboard, then you're bending your knees and you're staying low. And if you fall when you're low, you're not going to get hurt because you're really close to the ground already. We practice Bertelmans, the Bertelman turn, where you put your hand down and you kind of just slide out. If you get used to doing that a lot, then you're low and you're used to touching the ground without hurting your hands.
This makes a lot of sense because my head injury, I think it was so big because I'm so tall and I fell from tall, landed on concrete, split my head, and then back, same thing, came from up high. And my worst attribute is getting low. That's my worst aspect of surfing. That's why I can't ever really compete. I can't surf in small surf very well.
Yoga squat.
So I don't need skate instructor Eric. I need yoga instructor Eric.
You need to stay low. You need to bend your knees a lot. Always, never forget to bend your knees. Just really need to bend your knees deeply. Yeah.
Humility is a bitter pill to swallow, and I just swallowed a big one.
So I'm always just like, bend your knees.
I can't.
Good to stand tall, like when you're on a good, when you're on a wave and you just want to kind of cruise it.
That's probably why I like longboarding. You can do rail work, and if you can feel glide, you can be up tall.
You don't have to bend your knees. I'm very guilty of standing tall when I surf, and I think I really need to get low and be more centrifugal force. You look at Tom Curran, Kelly Slater; they're very, very bent surfers. And, Kelly's almost got his knee down to the board, and his foot sometimes it's on the side of his foot. So they're not really.
You're totally right. Those guys land sometimes; they can't even land on the other side of their feet.
Yeah, you see their knees are like almost laying on the board because they're just so low. You have to put it in your head. Thinking about, sometimes you have to think about what you want to do on the wave. you know, you want to read the wave and do what the wave tells you, but you have to think about bending your knees. You know, maybe you want to do a maneuver. Sometimes I want to do a maneuver while I'm surfing, but I just don't think about it. You know, I have to tell myself, like, oh, I want to do an aerial, so I have to think aerial day, you know, like, you know, sometimes I just forget. You take off in the wave, and just the wave's so beautiful, and sometimes you just want to ride it, feel it, and just stand there in the glory of it. And that's cool, too.
That is a beautiful thing.
But then you watch yourself on video, and you're like, well, why aren't I hitting the lip right there? Why aren't I, like, fully maximizing that space?
Dude, if you ever want to get humbled, just watch yourself surfing on video. My gosh. When I first moved here, who was it told me? It might have been James. Anyway, somebody early, like when I first showed up, I was like, wait, you have photographers on the beach? Oh my gosh, this is amazing. And they were like, yeah, it's pretty amazing, but don't get too carried away looking at the photos, because you're going to think you're better than you are. And yeah. I was like, well, I still want to look at it. I look at them all the time. And then when the video came out of like a trip up to OC or Marbella or something, I'd get like this little cover up with one little tiny snippet of you. And in my head, it was like, pipeline photo. That's exactly like all the surf magazines I read and stare at every day. And then when you see it on video, it was just...
You go surfing and think like, oh, I got really barreled. And then you see the video and you're like, I'm not even in the barrel. I'm nowhere close to the barrel.
I think I'm done saying I got barreled unless it just closes out on my head. And like, I know for sure in front of everybody.
I could have sworn I was in there.
I don't fit in barrels either because I don't get down low enough. I know what I've been working on. I should have told you this. I just dropped to my knees.
I was going to say that. I love that. I love that you do that. I just watched a movie about Steve Lisfish, and they were kneeboarders. And the whole thing they talked about was like, we're kneeboarders because we can fit into the barrels that the other guys get. The boogie boarders used to say that too. Like, we get tubed and you don't. And it's all about the tube and the visual. So like, I was walking down the beach the other day actually, and I saw you drop to your knees and pull into a barrel. And I'm like, that's Rich. Like, he's the only guy that does that. And you know,
hey, how much crap do I get? You can tell me, I don't mind.
No, but I was stoked because I was like, you know, I was like, most other guys, they wouldn't do that and they might be ashamed to do that, but I was like, he does it and I love him for that, because I'm like, that's how you're gonna get in there. You're doing what you have to do to achieve the goal, and there's no shame in it,
right? In 2 years my barrel time has drastically increased from many years, from over a decade of being here, just getting hit in the head and falling down, not ever making it. And I honest to goodness, I so badly want that visual or that moment or whatever that dopamine or whatever the release is that's happening. I want that so bad that I don't care if all y'all make fun of me. So I just really want that feeling, and I don't know how else to get it.
So I've had the opportunity when I was living in California to do a lot of surfboard shopping at yard sales and wherever else, thrift stores, stuff like that. And I've actually scored a couple Robert August twin fins that I thought were twin fins, but I later found out were knee boards. So I was riding these boards that I thought were just really fat twin fins, but then I later, actually Scotty has one of them. I sold him a red one.
Dude.
But I had this blue one for a while. It was a 5.7. I think the other one was a 5.7 too. I actually took this board to Robert August and they authenticated it. And but I was riding it, and it turned out it was 23 inches wide. So I had a 23 inch wide, 5'7" twin fin.
Sounds awesome.
I'm riding it at upper trestles, and I'm taking off at a point break, and it was just the fastest thing ever because of all the planing area. So I'm really going to be studying some of these knee board designs and probably bringing this extra width into my surfboards.
Right on. Maybe I could be a test pilot sometimes.
So this might be something for you, because you're saying, like, you know, I'm a bigger guy, and what can I do about my surfboard? I think we can do like a shorter surfboard, extra wide, because some of the shapers, they go X amount wide, and they're like, that's it, we're going to cut it off there, we're not going to go any wider. But I found that these wider boards actually work really great, and most people aren't going there with that.
Hey, what else do you want to get out there while you have this platform?
So one thing I do want to say is I'm launching a Kickstarter, but I'm not necessarily using the Kickstarter website. I'm offering 20 surfboards at $1,000 a piece, and this is to get me going. So if I can get 20 people, I've got five orders already. I've got five orders right now for surfboards, and I'm looking to get 20. 20 surfboards, I can really launch this thing. Build the shaping room properly, and get all my equipment. I went up to Tamarindo to price and source out supplies, blanks, and fiberglass and all that stuff. I've got a glasser and a sander already lined up.
It's a big component of this thing.
Things are really green lighted right now.
Right on, man.
So I'm taking the orders. I've already put it out there on Instagram and Facebook. And
so you're seeing it for $1,000.
Shape you whatever you want.
And you want to do that 20 times, and that's the bell that you're ringing right now.
That's my Kickstarter.
Oh, hey, update on your three favorite restaurants.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Three favorite restaurants?
Yeah. What are they?
All right, I'm going to have to say Chivo.
Okay.
Because I moved to Pallotta, and I've been going there a lot, and I painted a mural there, and we did a food credit.
What do you like to get at Chivo?
I get the wet burrito, the wet chicken burrito, and sometimes I'll get the fish and chips. They also have some really good Thai food and curry. There's a curry bowl that's really good. I'm gonna also say Destiny, because they just agreed to let me paint a mural there also.
All right, and what's the third?
You know what I'm gonna have to say? This probably hasn't been said yet, but I'm on a pure pizza diet. Yeah, I eat pure pizza almost every single day.
What flavor?
Either the margarita, just the regular cheese pizza, or I'll actually go for the pepperoni.
Hey, don't ask them for pineapple on pizza over there.
No. That's a crime. I mean, I was big into it. But I know that this is frowned upon in some communities.
In the G section, that's
In Italy, they don't do that. This is a Hawaiian. That's Hawaii. If you want a Hawaiian pizza, go to Hawaii.
No way, man. Put whatever you want on it and eat the heck out of it. But per pizza, actually, back in the day, Gerardo, Bergione's Gerardo, told us that. He's like,
oh, really?
I live there. He's like, thank God for them, or I wouldn't eat. It's easy.
Yeah, it's a staple for sure.
Nice. Any pet peeves that you have going on, like what's your biggest dislike about the place?
My biggest dislike about this place? People driving down the wrong side of the road. I don't like coming around a blind curve and somebody's in my lane coming right at me. That's I don't need that kind of adrenaline shock.
Especially with pavement.
Yeah, I have a motorcycle now and I'm riding around on my motorcycle, and then a Mack truck is coming at me and I'm like, what is happening right now?
For me, it's tailgating too close.
Yeah,
that's my biggest pet peeve in driving here now, because now people are
safe distance.
Are going faster. Also, sometimes you need to go around something, and if someone's right here, or if they're trying to pass so fast,
it's just super
dangerous.
You need to dodge for a pothole. The other day, I saw a 9-foot-long boa constrictor as I was walking down the jungle path. That was fun.
Whoa!
Yeah, I've seen the biggest snake I've ever seen here.
Oh, dude,
but I like that, and I hope with all the the development and everything, we keep seeing nature here. I just hope that we don't drive out things like that. I think it's really cool to be able to live amongst that.
Do you think the new people coming in are going to give back enough to help offset everything, or do you think the place is just going to grow and kind of spiral out of control?
I would hope that as a community, we're conscious enough to not let it spiral out of control. Because I think we move here for that. We want that. We don't want to see that. I'm just hoping that people with money interests don't come here just for that in mind, only just thinking about the money and not keeping a consciousness of keeping everyone happy that lives here. We all came here to be near the nature, near the beach, and I feel like we should kind of keep that level of nature available for everyone.
And don't take all your waves.
You can have. I've had so many waves. I don't mind sharing waves.
I'm hearkening back to the beginning of the conversation, bringing up full circle, where you said people can't take your waves because that's yours.
Well, that we were talking about the older angry me. I'm not
and
angry.
Today's you.
I'm grateful. I'm doing the Tai Chi. I'm giving gratitude. I have gratitude. I'm grateful for what I have. And I'm grateful for the life that I've lived. And I'm not angry.
I'm impressed that you're pulling it off, man. It's still going.
Yeah.
After all these years. And how many different incarnations?
I love my life, and I love my history, and I love where I'm going, so.
Congratulations, dude.
Good about it.
It's nice to see you, nice to hear.
Yeah.